the way we spend, save, or earn has much to do with how we are created, our experience, our money mindset, our software that runs in the background of how we see life.
Welcome to LifeWorks, where we talk about life and work and making it work. I'm Hannah Greenstein, a From mompreneur on a mission just like yours, to live the mompreneur life that brings me feelings of balance and inner peace and joy. Here, I hold space for you in the many roles you play as a From mommy business owner. Join me for support, mindset, techniques, and tools around productivity, focus, and work-life balance so you can feel in balance and at peace. If you can find excitement and joy at work and at home, you will thrive in the roles you play and feel fulfilled by your life's work. And that's what I want for you. So let's get started. Hello, ladies, and welcome back. I am so excited to share with you today's episode with guest expert Simi Mandelbaum because her insights and her guidance are just a treat. Simi gave me so much food for thought, and her message that it's your story and not your salary that are contributing to your stress around money just aligned so well with everything we talk about at LifeWorks, that it's about feeling in balance, that it's about being able to do everything you do successfully and incredibly while still feeling good and nurturing your inner well-being. Simi Mandelbaum is the founder and CEO of Prosper Financial Wellness, a center dedicated to reducing the stress and anxiety people feel around money. Incepted in 2019, Simi has helped over 100 clients reduce debt, increase income, and most importantly, live their money lives true to their goals and values. Simi also provides discounted coaching services via the Yellow Ribbon Network, a group formed to help veterans and other persons in need, as well as through Masila International, an organization providing services to indigent and struggling families. Simi is a certified financial therapist, accredited by the Financial Therapy Association, an accredited financial counselor, licensed by the AFCPE, and completed the Kansas State University Master's Certificate Program in Financial Therapy. Simi was featured on the popular podcast Kosher Money and provides resources to livingsmarterjewish.org, a division of the Orthodox Union. She has presented at the AFCPE National Convention, Masila International, and EPI, among others. Enjoy the episode. I know that you will because Simi has so much to offer, and I just can't wait to hear your feedback in terms of what Simi makes you think about, what changes she prompts you to implement in your life. As always, I look forward to hearing from you. Enjoy the episode. Thank you for joining me, Simi. I'm so excited to have you on the show.
Likewise. I know it took a while to get us together, so I'm really excited to start.
Yes, I think it's going to have been worth the wait. Before we dive into all the questions I have lined up for you, can you share your journey, how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, thanks for asking. How I got to where I am today. Interesting story. I'm in a second marriage, and I noticed when I got married that I seemed to think that I knew how to spend money and my husband didn't. And whatever he would purchase would be like, what was he thinking? Little things from purchasing at the convenience store pre-washed grapes to buying a soda at a gas station as opposed to buying it in bulk. I was like, it's so silly. It makes no sense. And I started seeing that I was acting. It was interesting to me to find myself reacting in ways that I was like, oh my goodness, what is wrong with me? And that led me to quite look around to see what other people's styles are. All of a sudden, in reality, like, am I correct or is he correct? Or how does this work? So I started searching to see how money works. And I came to understanding financial therapy, that there's a whole background about how we spend, a whole story that goes on in our head. And I was like, I've got to sign up because if I'm going through this, I'm sure there's someone else going through this. And honestly, even if I didn't know that I was going to go into this as a business, I was like, I can get help. I need that. And now I'm able to see those separate realities. Can't say you're ever healed, but it's something that you get to understand and address.
I love that your personal story brought you to be doing what you now do full time. And I'm curious to hear, because you said, I need to find out how money works. Is there an objective reality that money follows certain rules? Or are we all living these subjective realities? And it's like everyone has their own money story. And so money works differently for everyone.
So does money follow rules? There are books, there are courses, there's financial literacy, there are accountants. All these are the rules to finances. How much should you put away? How much should you spend in a category? Those are the rules. However, when it comes to the way we use our money, if we knew all the answers, it doesn't mean that we would be following those responses. Why is that? That's because the way we spend, save, or earn has much to do with how we are created, our experience, our money mindset, our software that runs in the background of how we see life. And so truthfully, when I'm working with a client or a couple, I'll work with their money beliefs, money mindset, their values to create a plan that works for them as opposed to following the script of what should be.
So is that how this money therapy, this financial therapy differs from, let's say, financial coaching, which is going to be much more focused on just the cold hard numbers?
There are three types of financial dispositions that I'm aware of: financial coaches, financial counseling, and financial therapy. Financial coaching deals with forward thinking, helping you achieve goals. Financial counseling deals with lower income, usually debt, people that are in severe debt or are going through bankruptcy. They work for counseling. And financial therapy deals with the emotions behind the money. There are many financial therapists that never open a spreadsheet, never open money. They're just dealing with the emotions that translates into the money spending or saving or whatever else has to be done. Does that clarify the different approaches?
Yeah, so interesting. And I know you're one of like three.
No. I'm one of about 400 now in North America that is trained as a financial therapist. And I believe to date, I'm the only Jewish woman that's trained.
Oh, wow.
Orthodox. Yeah.
Okay. So I have so many like preliminary questions before we really get in, just understanding the space you're in. Is there anyone that you would say wouldn't benefit from financial therapy? I'm sure some people need it more urgently than others, but is there anyone that, like, if you're fine, then there's not even what to be gained?
The person that wouldn't benefit from financial therapy is the person that's not willing to do some work on themselves, to question their beliefs, to see who they really are. So someone who's not ready for change, not interested in change, just wants to know what numbers look like, I would tell them, you're not for me. You can go to an accountant. You can go to something else. You could look up software online, Dave Ramsey. Those people are people that wouldn't necessarily gain as much from financial therapy.
That makes sense. Okay, Simi, what I am really wondering is, what does financial well-being from a financial therapist's perspective look like? Is there something to measure? Are there certain symptoms that disappear? How do you know when you've gotten to this place of well-being when it comes to your money mindset and your money story?
What does financial well-being look like? We have something called a financial anxiety scale. So when you come in for our services, we measure your anxiety. Because ultimately, it's not about how much is in your bank account. It's how you feel about that number, right? So if I have a couple that both know how much money they're earning, how much money they're spending, they're both on top of their finances, they know that there's $30,000 in an account. One would rank very high stress on their anxiety scale, and one would rank very low stress on their anxiety scale. Why is that? Hana, what's your thought?
I think it's all the background, all the money stories you were raised with, all the experiences you've had.
So you're saying it's according to your background and experiences. So it's to do with the way the person sees the money, which has to do with how they exactly, like you say, what their experience is with money, what they came from, and how they view it. So there are certain people that their financial well-being should be very high. They earn a very high living where there's a lot of money in their account, but their well-being, they're so anxious. They're not living financial well-being. So well-being is when the stress of money is not there. You're able to feel like you've got it under control. Make any sense?
Yeah, totally. But at the end of the day, money is really something, it's just a necessary resource and something that we need just to get through the day to day. And so for someone that, and I know that the numbers in the bank account don't necessarily correlate to the stress levels, and we'll talk about that. But for someone who is in a tight financial situation, when you're looking at the numbers, how do you talk to such a person about financial well-being and not feeling stressed when we're talking about being able to afford their basic necessities?
What are basic necessities are usually the key word there. Because I can have a couple that comes in with five kids earning $90,000 and feeling quite comfortable. They have maybe some programs or assistance, but they're fine. And I could have another family of four earning $300,000 saying that they're not meeting their basic needs, right? So it goes right back to that question. There is a number that is considered stressful. And so we, and I know this is in Israel, but I know all your audience is from all over. In America, the medium-sized income is about $68,000 to $75,000. So someone earning $150,000 as a couple would be considered a high net worth individual. In our community, in the Jewish community, that's not necessarily the case. It costs a little more. The number is a little higher. So therefore, if we're talking about someone that's below that level of income, of the poverty income or whatever it is, that stress that we have to deal with, we have to come up with resources for them to tap into. We have to be very granular in understanding their spending habits, where we may not have to do as much when someone just needs to clean up or figure out how to make their money work for them.
So interesting. Okay, so now can you address that point that you mentioned about the stress levels not necessarily correlating to the income levels or the amount of money that's in savings? What has your experience been? How does that manifest itself?
Love that question. What that anxiety scale that I mentioned before, it has a sheet that tells you your score. And when you click on to the next sheet, it tells you the information that it's pulling, what your score should be. And that's taken from three things: your age, your style of work, part-time, homemaker, full-time, employee, employer, and the income level you're at. And interestingly enough, the higher the score, the less stressed you are. So if you have a 60, you're very calm. The scoreboard goes up to about $100,000. And I always ask my clients, what do you think would happen if it would say $200,000, $300,000? Why do you think they didn't include that? And I'll ask you, Hannah, and your audience, why do you think they didn't do that?
Well, only because we're in this conversation, I'm going to guess that it just doesn't affect the stress levels.
So you're saying that if someone earns $100,000 and they're at a 60, when they would get $200,000 or $300,000 or $400,000, they'd be at the same 60.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's not necessary to add those numbers. Okay. Actually, what studies find is that when people have higher income, their stress level goes up.
Wow.
Yep. Interesting. Why do you think that is?
There are a few things coming to mind. One is raising your standards. You know, if I'm making more, so now I'm of a certain circles that I travel in and I need to meet certain standards and live a certain lifestyle that might not correlate with the income jump.
Okay. So you're saying that what we consider a lifestyle creep. So as your money increases, your lifestyle starts getting different. And so there's anxiety with that.
Yeah.
And that is actually, we have two answers here that come to mind. One of them is exactly as you say. What happens is, I don't know how much you're making today, but it could be in the place that you're making your money. You're saying, listen, according to what I make, I have, I don't know, maybe cleaning help once a week, twice a week. But if I had the money, I would get more cleaning help, or I would allow myself to buy whatever it is. So once that number comes and then you start doing that, that becomes your basic need. And now that's what I spend on, only the things I need. And so as people increase their income, they're like, one second, I'm in the same place I was before, but I'm earning $100,000 more. I got a bonus. And very often that's the time people are coming to me. They're like, I don't understand what happened. I was earning this and I was spending this. Now I'm earning $100,000, $200,000. I don't know. My money just goes quicker than I do. The second reason is people have an expectation of their money when it's a higher number. They're like, I'm making $250,000. I should be putting away for savings. I should have extra. There's a higher expectation of the money. And when they don't have it, they start like, one second, does that mean I'm going to forever have to work so hard? Does that mean I'm going to be constantly looking for raises, bonuses, never be home because I'm not making it? And so that's where anxiety comes. So we see from those two reasons that financial well-being is once again nothing to do with the numbers and much more to do with the way you feel about your money.
So fascinating. So let's talk to my audience and their specific situation for a little bit. They're from mompreneurs, so they're living a from lifestyle. They are running a business, and in many cases, they are either the primary or, you know, if not the sole breadwinner, a primary breadwinner in their family. And so all day they are thinking about the money because it's what they're busy with all day, landing the clients and signing the contracts and negotiating prices and watching their business's profit margins and watching that translate into the income that they take home. And at the same time, trying to maintain or to cultivate financial well-being and to not move into this place of money stress. What do you say to that?
Well, hello, mompreneurs. And I know you're calling me because I'm one of those mompreneurs here. It's an extremely, and I want to say stressful situation, even though it's not fair, because that's, again, relative to how you, what your personality is. And looking at profit margins, very often in our businesses, we're like, why is that not translating for me to take home more money? I'm a startup. I need to reinvest. I thought I would take out more money. It's not happening. How do I do it? It's not worth it. I'm working so hard. I'm not taking home money. Yeah. And all these thoughts come over in our head. And so the answer to that, there really isn't a clear answer for me to say, okay, so if that's the case, you know, the goal is pay yourself first, then whatever's left goes in the business, take out enough loans, figure it out. It really goes back to knowing what you need from your business to make sure you're priced out correctly, to make sure your profit allows you to take out the money you need. That may take longer to get there in a business. And the second part is really knowing that we're here. And we're not, and I love saying this on this particular podcast because a lot of your audience is religious, that there's a higher power for us. We're not in control of the money we make, although we feel like we control the money we make. We feel like if we work harder, it's going to bring in more revenue. But those are just our beliefs. In the same way, it's a belief that if you have more money, you're calmer. And so it's important to know our hashtaglas, what we're putting into our business. And then whatever else is not coming or is coming is our guide to how we should do our life. It's by no measure a measure of our success as an individual. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, totally. And I was wondering, because I'm sure that in this space that you're in, the resource of having bitachon and believing that hishtadlus is in our hands, but nothing else is really, really valuable. And do you talk hashkafa with your from clients?
I hate to sound like a rabbi or in that caliber. I don't want to know too much because they'll ask me questions and I'm not sure the answer. But I will often say, because it everywhere, if we recognize that we're just quote unquote those puppets doing the best we can, it alleviates our stress. For me, going through my own money trauma or money situation, I learned Shaar Bitachon 3 times and I'm still on my 4th. Why? Because it reminds me that the more I rely, the less I'm stressed. That's the key to that anxiety bit. Doesn't matter what's happening. It may seem like I'm in control. And it's work that I do. And I think work that we all have to do constantly. It's not like you wake up and say, I got this under control. I'm never going to have to worry again. I feel confident. It's something that we work on. It's scary. You're right when you say money is imperative. It's imperative as a vehicle to get us from place to place, whether it's our children, whether it's camps, whether it's food, whether it's health. It's imperative. But it also really is our way to allow ourselves to see how beautiful this world is and how little we are if we're able to take a step away and look at it. And I read this wonderful thing about, and I'm trying to remember where, about a guy who got a brand new car. Oh, yes. I think it was in one of the magazines, Mordechai Kamenetsky at the end of that. No, it was not. I'm sorry. It was Leiby Birnbaum. And he wrote about seeing a car that's scratched, always having old cars. And then he gets himself a brand new car, never had a brand new car. And his kid with a scooter scratched the side of it. And he's looking at the car every morning. And he's so into the value. He never needed a new car. And when he opens that door, he sees a scratch. And he's thinking, I can't believe it. It's 30% of my day. Like, how often am I opening the door and looking at it? But every time I look at that car, I see a scratch. And he was talking to himself, like, how important? Should he spend the money on fixing it? Is it not important? And it's really, that is our life. If we're so stuck at looking at that scratch, at looking at that number all day long, we're not going to be able to see the bigger picture. Like, zoom out of that car. Look at it from above. It's a beautiful car. Look at it closer. You see all those scratches. I feel like in addition to us having those flaws as human beings, it's our money too. How many times will I sit with clients on pen and paper? It doesn't make sense. It's not going to work. And yet it does. Why? So I feel really that's an important part of our journey as mompreneurs, as work-life balance, as money balance.
Yeah. Wow. So powerful. What is the first step for someone to take? So she's sold. She's ready to not feel stressed about money, even if she's not hitting those numbers that she wants to hit yet. What's the first question to ask yourself? What's the first step to take?
The first step to take is just starting to be aware of what things are costing. Just start looking around, because very often we have no idea what we're spending. And honestly, we don't want to know, because then we start judging ourselves. Like, was that a good purchase? And all of a sudden, those little voices in our head say, you should have gotten that. You should not have gotten that. And all those justification things come out. So it's sometimes easier not to know. So the first step is just start recognizing what things are costing. I want to love and I want to say, and I love to say, to start being able to put that down somewhere so you're able to see what's happening. That's that first step.
Okay. And like, at what point do we dive into saying like, okay, I'm going to heal my money story and my money mindset and all the beliefs that I'm holding that are keeping me stuck in this stress?
So a typical person that's coming here is saying to themselves, I've tried something. I've tried budgeting. It's not working. I see that I'm making more money and I'm still stressed. I see my spouse and I don't stop disagreeing about how to spend our money. I see our lifestyle is increasing, or my kids are getting older and it's no longer enough what used to be enough. So these are the type of questions that people are going through when they're like, I don't think I can do this on my own. I need extra support. This is something that I can get those numbers down, but what do I do with that information? Or how do I read it? Or how do I know it's right? And although I'll make something for that client, meaning we'll come up with something with their values, I will take guidelines. I show them what is the guidelines of what you should spend. Now we'll talk about you. So you don't have to tell me your values. You plug in your numbers and I'll tell you your values. Because I know based on what's coming up. It sounds like you like to have parties. Am I saying that correct? Because your grocery bill and your entertainment and your house or something is really high. Are you the type of person that likes to have parties or have your family over? Oh, how do you know? You're the type of person that really enjoys sitting in a comfortable car. I'm noticing that that bracket is a little higher. So we'll go into why is that? Or that's important to me because I have a back issue. And so those are really important things to take into account.
Fascinating. I'm just thinking that, you know, your kids can't come home from school and say like, but everybody has it. Like, you really have the inside scoop of what everybody really has and how unique everyone's spending and lifestyle is.
Well, there are definitely trends, and the kids, you know, will go to a store and they'll show me what's the in thing. It's very interesting. And even now I'll be getting calls about, you know, camp. How do you handle camp? How do you handle that there's a peer pressure element? What do you do? So there's definitely that element that doesn't matter. It's not really a one size fits all. But there are certain trends. Listen, inflation, that's a trend. I'm seeing that across the board. No doubt.
Yeah, I think probably between the time that we talked about scheduling this episode and now the time that we're recording, things have kind of gone a little haywire.
The most interesting part for me are my little clients that are purchasing houses. in the past, about a year ago, oh, interest rates were really low. The market was really high. Now the market's going a little soft, but the interest rate's high. Should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? And all this is coming up. So that's an area that is interesting and not anything to do with our regular expenses, but an area that's definitely quite affected by inflation and the increase in the interest rates.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear your take because I've been asked this by a few people recently, and I know that one-to-one coaching is always the most effective when first of all, there's give and take and when you could take into account a person's values and circumstances. But what general advice can you give to the question of helping someone decide if a purchase is justified? So a lot of times women are talking to me about this in terms of purchases for their business. And especially if they're not at the point where they really view their business as a separate entity than anything else in their life. So any money that comes into the business, they kind of consider coming into their personal bank account. And so then it's not just, is this worthwhile investment for the business? It's, is this worthwhile if it's coming out of the grocery bill, which is a whole different conversation that I'm sure you have what to say on. But how could someone, what questions should they be asking themselves? What should they be looking at when they're making a decision about making an investment?
First of all, many entrepreneurs, mompreneurs and entrepreneurs commingle their personal and their business life. And the first thing I like to do is segregate it, even if it's in the business account. So if legally and you're allowed to have these deductions in your business account, we want to even classify what from the business is being taken out for your home. Meaning if it's a phone expense, a health insurance, whatever it is, and we want to segregate that number. And a little extra, those are your padding numbers. And then what is the business on its own? And what do you need to take out of the business into your personal? They're separate. I find that so important because very often they're like, oh, it's in the business. Oh, it's a business expense. So I could just put it on the business. And not one minute. Just because you could put your remodeling of your house because you have a home office on your business expense. Now you're wondering why your business is not doing well. And you don't have enough money to take it home. And it's a whole revolving thing. So segregating the accounts to make it look like you're running almost like three businesses would be so helpful. And so when you're looking at your business now and you're saying, is this a good investment? You're able, and again, it's hard because this is emotional, because I am involved. This is my personal, and this is where it's emotional. How can I see the business as its own entity if I was giving someone else that advice? What is my ROI? In a business, it's much easier than personal. What's my return on investment? What do I believe I'm going to be able to make on that? How will it work? Can I take a loan on that business because I believe it will generate that income so it won't hurt me? Is there ability for grants? So looking at the business from its own entity allows you to see as a business person what you could be offered as a business person, which is way less than you can as a personal.
Yeah. So would you say that that type of decision should be made completely objectively just by looking at the numbers and seeing what makes sense financially? Even though it feels so emotional, it's time to just, as much as you can, take those emotions out of the equation.
Emotions are what we are guided by. Logic really isn't. So if in our gut, it doesn't sit well, I'll always say not to do anything right away. Take that logic, put it on the side, put it on your paper, put it on a big board. I have a big board that I look at all the time. And I'll go to sleep on it and try to feel in my gut, where is it coming from? Is it coming from fear because I'm scared of my groceries? Or is it coming from fear because it's scary to take such a leap in the business because it's so much money? Where is it coming from? Trying to identify and label it will allow me to figure out how to logicize or say, you know what? Even if it's all the right decisions, I just don't feel comfortable. Maybe right now is not the time. And I think making that decision is more important than just sitting on it for so long because you're not sure you are sure you're not. Just making decisions. As business owners, sometimes we get into that analysis paralysis where we can't figure it out. Well, you know, let me just think about it and never get back to it.
Okay. I love that. I love how it balances the logic with the emotion. I was just talking to someone about this, so I'm excited for her to listen to the episode. I'm curious how you address the aspect of money mindset with a couple who obviously might not be on the same page and might not have the same money mindset, especially in the circles that I'm in, it's women who are running their businesses. And so they're in this space and they're excited to learn about money mindset. And they're like, abundance, abundance, moving into abundance. And their husbands are not necessarily on board.
First of all, money mindsets in a couple, in case they're not on the same page, they're not on the same page because none of us are living in the other person's reality. So disclaimer, you're not going to be on the same page. Once you can recognize that you have separate realities, how do we work together? And the thing I like to teach then is skills on how to hear the other person. Because when you hear, not listen, or not hear, yes, listen, I forgot which one is which. But when you're able to hear what motivates that person to see life that way, it does something in your head where it softens it. Just that understanding allows you to figure out how to work with them. So in a situation where the mompreneurs are in abundance and their spouses are not on that page, it becomes more complex than money mindset. And that's because very often a man's feeling is to provide. And if he feels that that has been taken away, he may not know what to do with that part of his ego in trying to provide or trying to give. How does the man feel valued as an individual, as a provider in the community, in the family? And it's important for not the wife to give respect, but to identify places that the person, that the husband will feel like that. So there's not that tug of, you know, breadwinning problems. Does that make any sense in what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. I'm just thinking like where I should take this next because I love it. It's so, so fascinating.
You know, so I'll even like put in a story where with one of my clients, where we were discussing about this particular issue with men making less money than their wives. And they had made up that that's how this would work. But he was feeling uncomfortable. And I'm only identifying a specific story because he allows it. And what we came to is that he ended up working a lot more in volunteer areas that made him feel needed, made him feel productive because it wasn't enough for his wife to respect him and he should feel good about himself. He needed outside or external ways, even though maybe therapeutically that's not the right thing for him, he needed that to feel like he was a man. So there are different ways to approach it. I know that everyone has a different way and there isn't a one size fits all. That's always, you know, even looking at our families, at our children, at our spouses, it's not a one size fits all.
So interesting. And that story just demonstrates again, how it's like always about how you're feeling.
So imagine your fist. So I'm showing you my fist, but imagine your fist. You see how there's a long arm connecting the fist? This is our cerebellum, like the brain, the back of our head. And in here, as you turn your hand, as you turn your fingers around your fingers that are in a fist, that is what we call inside here. It's connected to the arm. That's what we call the monkey brain or the emotional brain or the limbic brain. That's where we make our decisions from. You see how it's connected to our spine, right? And so into our brainstem. And so when we make a decision, it always goes through our emotion first. Around it is that thumb, which is our logic. When we're doing money, we want to combine the logic with the emotion, but we know that it's always going to go through emotion. So the same way you said to me before, like, how do you have that well-being or how do you make those decisions? You're going to know, you're going to start noticing that I'm always going to have the emotion first. The logic only comes after. And that's why when something is emotional, the first thing we do is take a step back and allow for space. Wait for time, whether that's in a relationship, whether that's an internal thing. When you wake up in a bad mood and the same question could be posed to you one day and over the next day, you'll be answering it completely different. So recognize that if you're in that bad place, you may want to say to that person, come back to me another time. Today, you're not going to hear anything nice from me. Like, not a good time.
Fascinating. So it's like we have to be intentional about making space for the logic because otherwise emotion is our default.
Absolutely. Emotion is the place it goes first. And that's our trigger. So if it's a trigger thing, whether it's spending, whether it's saving, whatever it is, that's our trigger. That's our trigger. Oh, yeah. That's a red bulb coming up.
Wow. Incredible. I have a question for you, Simi, from a member of my membership, LifeWorks Empowered. they're able to submit questions to my podcast guests. So I'm curious to hear your take on this. It's a little bit of a long question. I'm going to try to cut it down. She says she's an impulsive shopper by nature. She could blow hundreds of dollars in a shopping spree, and then she'll just get another skirt and another sweater and a sandwich and iced coffee and extra clothing. And she likes it. And then her kids don't wear it because it's the wrong size. And like, she's an impulsive shopper. She said, I know I sound out of control, but other times I could go weeks without buying extras at all. She hasn't been able to tie down a specific feeling that results in random purchases. In general, she's a little more impulsive. It's the way she grew up. It's her personality. And she says financially, it's not an issue for her to keep up these patterns, but she feels horrible that she's buying on a whim without thinking things through, I guess, right? Acting from that emotion and not that logic. And she wants to know, how can I overcome those spending cravings in a normal way? And I could just imagine your therapist brain hearing, you know, normal. How could you overcome these spending cravings in a normal way without going too far to the extreme?
First of all, what sticks out and is loud glaring for me is the fact that she feels horrible about spending on whim. So to me, it feels like she's telling me that she's powerless over her spending habit. When a person feels powerless, it's almost like they don't have a choice, right? Our life, the minute we feel boxed in and we don't feel in control, or we don't feel like we have choices, that's when we're stressed. That's why I don't call it a budget. I call it a spending plan. Spending, those are options. Budget, ooh, limitation, I can't do anything. So the first thing, and she says, I can't identify feelings. That's right. That first awareness that we discussed before, where the first step is to create, to just see what you're spending. When someone's not in control, that awareness is not there. They don't even know where to start. There are so many different little questionnaires that could be filled out. We have them as well, where a person could see, is this a behavior problem or is this a single standalone issue? And in our community, surprisingly, there is a high amount of compulsive shopping disorder, and it's the only addiction that doesn't have a bad stigma to it. So it's not like it's alcohol. It's not like it doesn't have that bad connotation. So it could really be overlooked and not seen. And especially when finances allow for it, it could go on and unnoticed, because ultimately that person feels good in the moment. They just don't feel good after. In the moment, they are receiving good things. And this came to me one day when I was shopping at a store that I frequent, and the person said to me, "Ooh, I got a dress you'd love." And I was like, felt so good. Like, they know my taste. They know what I would like. And I found myself buying something I may not even bought because I love the feeling that they know what I want, right? But I had to be aware that that was coming to me. Like, oh, it seems like I like to go where they recognize me. Or I feel good when I walk into somewhere and they say, how are you? Oh, good to see you. That feeling in itself is enough to propel people to purchase. So my advice for her would be first to fill out an overcompulsive shopping little questionnaire online or anywhere she could find to see if she falls into that category. And if she does, they have different ways of identifying feelings or getting in touch with it so that you could see and patternize when it happens. Is it happening at a certain time of month? Is it happening when you just had a fight? Is it happening when you're really excited? Because you said she has times where she may not talk. So something may be triggering that she's not even aware of.
Fascinating. I'm curious what's your top tip when it comes to getting really practical with money? So you mentioned the spending plan. Is that your go-to? How does that work?
My spending plan is always forward thinking. So that means if I live in my past, then my past is only giving me advice on what to project for my future. But you're trying to see what I'm anticipating to come up so that even if I'm going to be tight, when you know you're going to be tight, you could decide something. Remember that word choices? You could choose to do something different. Rather than swipe a card and find out denied, that's like a blaring trigger for people. Like, oh my goodness, we can't. So understanding and creating a spending plan will allow, even in a business, when you create that, oh wow, I'm investing this much money, I'm projecting to have losses. I'm projecting that, even though it doesn't feel good in that moment. And you're going to have to come back to that sheet when you project those losses and you see it actually happening is a whole nother story. Because theory to reality, totally different. In theory, I'm fine projecting losses. In reality, heart palpitations. What do you mean? How long? Oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Right? Back to that whole emotional part. So when you're able to do that and you're able to get to a place where you're feeling like you've got it under control, that is the most practical thing that people can help themselves with, and not by doing it day after day or over a month. Do a 3 month, because in our culture, we have a holiday every 3 months, pretty much. There's an increase, there's a decrease. So you want to give yourself that understanding. Hey, yeah, this is going to be a crazy month. August, we're going to buy all the back to school stuff, prepare for the holidays, get our house stacked up, da 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 da. September may dip, October back up. So you want to be able to see when can I catch myself? What should I project? How should I do this? Does that make any sense for you?
Totally. And I love it because you talk money mindset and money management, and I talk a lot about time mindset and management. And I just feel like it's all the exact same things, just like swap out the words time and money, because we talk so much about making intentional decisions with how you're spending your time, right? You could not want to work when your kids are home, but if you know that this week is crazy and there's vacation, you can make that intentional choice, and then it feels much better than just by mistake working when they're home. And also planning for that we have the same ups and downs that we have with our money, we have with our time, because the same way you spend money on holidays, you take time out of your business for them. So I just love how it's all aligning. It's all part of the same puzzle.
That time and money thing is a biggie, by the way, because very often in life, we either have one or the other. We don't always have them the same. We don't always have time and money. Sometimes we'll have time, but that means we don't have money. Sometimes we'll have money, right? So therefore, I find it really important to have clients set intentional, valuable time for themselves, even if it costs money. Go on that vacation, because you know what? You'll be so rejuvenated coming back that the money that you're spending on that will double in the pleasure that you're enjoying in life. We're not looking to live in a life that all we do is work to eat. We want to create a life that we're enjoying what we're doing, and work is helping us get there. And that's what I want for my clients, for their money to do with them. I don't only want them to build a robust fat savings account. I want them to enjoy their money so that doesn't have to be wait till you lose 100 pounds before you can eat a brownie.
Right. Amazing. I want to go back to your work, Simi. Do you have a specific process you follow with your clients, or is it more fluid? Come to a session, talk about what's on your mind.
No, we do, because I am a financial therapist that marries money and therapy. Again, most people do not. Because I do marry them, there is a specific process in the way we do so. So I'll start off with a discovery session in which I'll just get to know the client's money personality by a couple of questions, just touching on it to see where they came from, just a couple of questions. And then I'll roll into the numbers, whether it's me or a financial coach that will handle that. And then we'll keep going back and forth. But depending on what package a person will purchase will be if they're going to spend just the time getting financial literacy with a touch of the financial psychology, or they're going to spend more time with it. So it depends on what a person is, but there is a process that we follow. Even in the financial therapy process, there is a process, which means I have certain games we play. And from those games, we work on those communication skills. So there is a process. It's not just like sit down and, you know, we're going to spend the next hour. I'm more goal focused, because my goal is not to keep clients here forever. That's not my goal. My goal is get you here, help you through it. Usually takes anywhere from 3 months to a year till you feel really good and clear about how to do it on your own. And then clients will come back maybe a year later to go over their goals, set up their next year plans. But that's my goal. And therefore, it's targeted. But definitely, I will start every session by saying, I have my agenda, but is there something going on that you want to discuss? Because how many times, if I have my agenda, but the client is in the middle of a debt situation, but I feel like we should put down numbers today, I'm not helping anyone. I'm here to help you.
Have you seen a pattern in terms of the way that specifically from females approach money? Or stress about money?
I can't say I have a pattern, but I once read an interesting situation that really gave me an eye-opener. The question came about, someone sent me a question, and it said, I have a guy that I'm working with, He's about to earn a $150,000 bonus. He doesn't want his wife to know. He wants to know how to allocate it. Can you help him? What's your thoughts, Hannah?
I would really not know what to respond. Why doesn't he want his wife to know?
Maybe he doesn't want her to spend the money before. Maybe he's fearful if it doesn't come through. I don't know that in the question. But what's interesting for me was that I'm thinking, to me, that sounds like financial infidelity, not being honest with your spouse. And I didn't know how I felt about that. So it happened to have been my date night with my husband. And I asked him if he would honor me, because I'm crazy and have crazy ideas, to walk with me on a boardwalk and allow me to ask random people this question. Would you want your husband to let you know if he was going to make a $150,000 bonus? And my assumption was every woman would say yeah. And I was completely surprised to hear women say no. Why should I know about it? He's taking care of the money. I don't want to know about it. And so I started, as I was asking this question and getting these, what I considered crazy responses, I started seeing for any markers that were similarities. And what came out of it was that people that weren't involved in their finances didn't necessarily want to know that there was more money. People that saw a husband as being responsible or taking care or being at work all day didn't have any interest in knowing. The women that were more involved in their finances or were working had more of a say. I want to know. Of course I want to know. I want to be excited about it. I want to plan for it. And if it doesn't come through, you know, at least it was something going. And so to me, that was my money belief that I got, boom, cowed out. So it depends on what is that woman doing in her life. And at different parts of her life, we may be different people. In a certain situation, in a marriage that you are involved in finances, and that's a part of the way you see things and you're a team building, you may have more of an interest. In a relationship that your spouse doesn't want you to know, that's not where he wants you being, you may not have any interest. The same person in a different situation may react differently.
Wow. Fascinating. Would you say there are any like top three tools that you could point to for someone to have in order for them to get to this place of not feeling stressed about money or this place of financial well-being? So obviously, bitachon is a really, really big and helpful one. What are the other top ones that come to mind?
Another great one on the flip side of the bitachon is feeling in control. How do you feel in control? By setting yourself up for success. So not just having the bitachon that it will all be good, but seeing what's going on. That allows you to have some feeling of well-being because I feel like I know what's going on. I had a woman tell me yesterday that when she swiped her card, she freaked out. It denied. But when I asked her, have you looked at your plan lately? She said, no. So I said, how do you think you could get to a place of well-being? Would you like your husband to keep funding that card? And she said, no. I said, why not? She said, if he funds it, I won't know how much I'm spending. This is a debit card. It's only how much is in my account. I want to know how much is in my account, but I don't want to get denied. So you hear the tug that she's dealing with, right? She wants to know what she has. She doesn't want extra because she doesn't want to overspend, but she doesn't want to look at what's happening. It's too scary for her. So we had to work through that for her to allow. And now she sent me a message. She's like, you know what? I opened it this morning and I'm like, oh, it's just information. It's not scary. It's just telling me, and that's so cool. Thank you. So that's a really good part as well. Getting yourself under control, making you feel like you have control allows for well-being. Another good thing I have, and I just love this, is just knowing how, if you're in a relationship, having good listening skills so that when situations come up, because they always do, you can work them out without feeling so alone, without feeling so confused, without feeling like there's a fight. Because we know that the number one stress in relationships is money. And you know what ranked number two, by the way? Snoring. But money was across the world, not across the United States, globally, 78%. So I would love people to start learning how to use those listening skills. Learning how to hear, learning how to reflective listen. That is a great tool. There's something called Imago therapy, which also teaches you those reflective listening skills that are so helpful and beneficial. Those are three good components to have someone feel much healthier in the financial health thermometer.
Fantastic. Okay, Simi, we're going to wrap this up with you making this really, really actionable for our listeners. What is something that you challenge listeners to? Something doable, something impactful. What do you challenge them to do?
I challenge all you listeners to sit down tonight and write down this week's spending and look at it and start seeing if you can see what is your value in life. What do you find yourself spending a lot on that says your personality right there? Can you find it? Can you see?
I love it. So good. And if listeners want to find you, follow you, connect with you, learn more, where can they do that?
You can go onto my website, which is Prosper, P-R-O-S-P-R. We leave out the E for excuses, no excuses, .fit, F-I-T, because we're in shape, financial shape. Or you can connect with me on LinkedIn. You can reach out at simi@prosper.fit, and they can reach out to you and know how to get to me in addition.
Yep. Okay, this was so incredibly valuable. Thank you so much for your time, Simi, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, and good luck to your audience. And just, you all are rock stars. Do what you do best, enjoy life. And I'm talking to myself when I say don't get stressed out, because there's no such thing. But try to take the moment. It's a beautiful summer. Take a step back. Enjoy your life. We're going to be in business for a while. So let's enjoy the ride.
Thank you so much, Simi. I'm so intrigued. I'm so fascinated. And that was really, really lots of value packed in.
Thank you. And thank you for allowing me to share this message and to share that anyone and everyone is normal to feel stressed when it comes to money. It's just knowing what to do with that information.
Right. So powerful. Thank you, Simi.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. As always, head to lifeworkspodcast.com because that's where the party's at. Drop a comment, #ILifeWorked, on this episode to let our community know that you took the challenge and encourage others to do the same. If you want to hear more about what I do for mompreneurs and how we can work together, reach out, Hannah@lifeworkspodcast.com. Wishing you a day of work and life that work to bring you tremendous fulfillment and joy. Till next time, I'll see you here. And again, thanks for being a part of our incredible community. Thank you.